would be fair to say that most people have at least heard of Wirecard and may have somewhat of an idea of what exactly went on with that whole saga. But just on the off chance there is anyone who has never heard that fabled name before, could you just give us like a real highlight overview of the journey that you and Wirecard went on?
Yeah, so Wirecard wasn't even really a household name in Germany. So it was this little payments company, or it started life as this little payments company. And it told everyone it was the European PayPal. And it did a pretty simple business. If you had like an online store, it would help you take payments from customers and get the money from the credit card company to you. And it was pretty simple. And it became a bit of a stock market sensation. And over time, it slowly got more and more valuable. And what happened was, way back in 2014, I started looking into it. And it looked a little bit fraudy. There were a bunch of red flags. Some of its numbers didn't make sense. And to give you the very broad overview before we jump into the details, nothing really happened. You know, wrote a bunch of stories. The company got attacked by short sellers. And every time, the German authorities came to Wirecard's defense and sort of investigated the company's critics or dismissed what they were saying. And it got so big that it entered the DAX 30, you know, the equivalent of the FTSE 100. And it was the next big thing. It was this huge company which was going to transform, you know, the whole economy, bring cashless payments to the world. And it turned out that it was a gigantic fraud. And with the help of some whistleblowers and with a few adventures along the way, the Financial Times was finally able to expose this, and it came crashing down in the summer of 2020. And there's been a parliamentary inquiry since. There are some trials due to start of some former executives in September. And the story that I've written is really the, you know, we hear a lot about dirty money. And this is the experience of when dirty money comes after you. And so there were hackers, there were private detectives, there were high-powered lawyers, all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff happened.
And again, fascinating read. For those of you who don't have a book, you know, please do pick it up at your local bookshop or on your online bookstore. Again, great read and great account, and many congratulations for your book, Dan. Let's go back to what you said. You were first tipped off about Wirecard being potentially rotten back in 2014 from a fund manager that had just uncovered a fraudulent mining company using much the same skills as an investigative journalist. Do you feel then that the investigative work that you do has much in common with that of fund managers researching investment opportunities, including, as you describe, short sellers, you know, taking short positions on a stock, that being where the fund manager takes a view that a share price will fall in value given their belief that the stock is overvalued? Except your research ends up with a front page splash instead of the fund manager being depicted as a bearish trade.
Yeah, so the fund manager you mentioned there is John Hempton, the Australian guy behind Bronte Capital. We were chatting about frauds, and he knew the sort of stories I was interested in. And he said to me, "Dan, would you be interested in some German gangsters?" I'm like, "Sure, yeah, that sounds really interesting." I jotted the name down Wirecard and started to have a little look into it. The reason why I was talking to John is because I'd sort of worked out that short sellers were kind of interesting. These hedge fund managers who are trying to look for companies who are overvalued. And I think a lot of the skills are similar. And really, I mean, you know, your job as a journalist isn't to become expert in everything. It's to find the experts and get them to tell you the important information that you need. And so I had decided that short sellers were interesting because they were looking for corporate wrongdoing. And I basically wanted to find the next Enron. People like John, and there's quite a few hedge fund managers who pop up in the tail. They do quite journalistic work. They're looking for, you know, evidence of lies, things which don't fit. And, you know, there's a bunch of financial analysis in there as well. But really, you know, the beauty of a fraudulent company from the perspective of an investor is that it can very quickly go from 100 to 0. And so if you can spot that in a barn, and if you can get confidence that this is a fraud, then you can make a lot of money. But there are differences between those sorts of investors and journalists. And one of the big ones is that I can ring up a company, or I can ring up other people, and get them to talk to me in a way that a hedge fund manager or an investor can't. Because you can sort of brush off a random hedge fund manager, but if the Financial Times comes and knocks on your door and threatens to write a story about you, you kind of have to say something. And what we do is we don't have any dog in the fight. So, and I think you see that sometimes. I mean, short sellers get a lot of criticism, a lot of it unjust, and that becomes a big part of the Wirecard story. But, sometimes the public short sellers do throw a whole lot of mud at a company just to see what sticks. Whereas if you're being a journalist at the Financial Times, we have to check everything that's been told to us. We sort of understand what the incentives of the guys we're speaking to. And, we only print what we can prove or, reconstruct for ourselves. But yeah, they make great sources. And, everybody in finance has a financial interest. The management want their stock options to pay out. I think you just get used to dealing with the kind of financial interest that that hedge funds and other investors have. And I find them interesting characters.
And I'm going to take pity on our listeners here, because we've mentioned fraud, we've mentioned German gangsters, and hinted at a few adventures on the way. And so I'm just going to have to ask you about this directly, because one of the short sellers that you mentioned who put out some written research are the authors of the Zatara report. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I've only read it up until now.
Yeah, Zatara, that's right.
And that's really one of the first examples of corporate malfeasance at Wirecard. And once that came to light, alongside your own coverage, everybody involved, including yourself and these fund managers, came in under some real pressure in what can really only be described as sort of Cold War style espionage, with cyber attacks and even people sort of turning up on your driveway in unmarked cars. And there's a lot more details there as well. And so it really does read like something out of, an Ian Fleming novel, rather than something that actually happened to you as an FT reporter in London, of all places. And, only a short time ago as well. So I think the question I really wanted to ask is, was there at any point where you really genuinely felt worried? I mean, you give some examples about the protocols you put in place to try and stay safe. But so, at your most concerned, how concerned were you, if that makes sense?
So it was pretty scary at times. So one of the characters in the book is Matt Earl. He's a short fella who runs Shadowfall Research these days. But he was also behind this Zatara attack, which in 2016 published a then anonymous dossier saying there was a whole bunch of money laundering being done by Wirecard and the authorities should investigate. And Matt and I have often talked about what we experienced after that. And it was a really weird thing, because if you tried to talk to friends or other people about it and basically say, yeah, so there's this German bank which is out to get me, you just sound mad, right? And the infuriating thing is that for a very long time, there was no way we could prove Wirecard was behind it. So it started with the hackers. So me and my colleagues and lots of other people who had criticized Wirecard started to get all these phishing emails. Turns out it was from an Indian hacker gang. And then this anonymous whistleblower pops up on the internet with pictures of some of my emails, which were real. And so we knew somebody had been hacked. And then these private detectives start showing up and you become really incredibly paranoid. And I started finding myself doing strange things. Like, I'm just looking out my window here. I live at the end of a cul-de-sac. And at the end of it is this big hedge. And I knew that one way you can spot cameras is if you shine a light on them. So when I would drive in at night, I would just try and sort of like sweep the headlights across the hedge, keeping it out for a little reflection. Partly because I didn't want my neighbours to see me going and just like nosing around in the hedge looking for a camera which wasn't there. But that kind of, that sort of pressure, knowing that you have sort of these guys who are out to get you, that becomes really oppressive. And particularly when things heated up in 2019, when we were in this real battle with the company, we started to realise that Russian spies were somehow involved. And you start to become, yeah, a little bit worried about your safety, you know. If I stand close to the platform, is someone going to just push me in front of a train? Or, you know, as you're cycling home on the bike, I would always have this, like, nagging worry in the back of my mind, particularly when you're cycling home in the dark, that, well, if I got hit by a bus here, it would really solve a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Hi, I'm Drew Nicol, co-host of The Long Short, and you've just heard a small part of our conversation with Dan McCrum, a reporter at the Financial Times, who spoke to us about his investigation of one of the biggest fraud cases of the past decade. To hear the full conversation, search for episode 32 of The Long Short on your preferred podcast platform, or visit aimer.org and search for The Long Short. If you found this episode interesting, please like and subscribe to stay up to date and help others find the podcast. Thanks for listening.